welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio Houston with our hosts from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn, and policy expert Mandy Kimball. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Mandy?
Hey, happy Monday, everybody. How's everyone doing? Hey, Don, thanks for doing the show as always, and glad to have you there in the booth. Mandy's not here today, though. This is Thanksgiving week, and so Mandy is off with her kids, and so we wish her well. Joining me here in the studio are our Vista AmeriCorps volunteers, Chanel Brown, Genesis Herrera. How are you guys doing today, by the way? Jen, you doing well?
Yes.
Chanel?
Doing good.
Yeah. So you're going to help me. This is our Thanksgiving edition show. So we're going to want to hear about your favorite Thanksgiving memories, your favorite food, your favorite traditions. And we're going to ask the audience the same thing. Chanel, do you have a favorite Thanksgiving food right off the bat?
My favorite Thanksgiving food is mac and cheese.
My
mom makes five cheese mac and cheese, and it's delicious.
Who could argue with five cheese mac and cheese,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Right.
And we'll get Don's favorites as we go as well, and a couple of other people. But we're going to start off today, a couple of good guests today. Staff Attorney Caroline Roberts will be here. She's our data head for today. The number today, Genesis, $1.5 billion. Any ideas?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I know you don't.
I'm sorry.
we also have after date head Farhan Mahid. He's over at Rice University. He's a health technology policy expert. He's a fellow there. He'll be joining us to talk about an op-ed that he wrote recently about natural disasters like Hurricane Harvey and the effect that they have on pregnant women and children in the early years of life. We'll also be talking today with Ken Wells. He's the president and CEO of Cherish Our Children International. He'll be talking about the vulnerability and risk factors children with incarcerated parents face. Should be interesting. Thumbs up, thumbs down today. We're really going to talk about favorite Thanksgiving memories, favorite Thanksgiving foods. Our good buddy David Cordua, a famous chef here in Houston, he had a TV show on last night. We'll be talking a little bit about that. But we'll be talking to David about his favorites around Thanksgiving as well. And then finally, we're going to be talking with our hurricane experts here in the studio. Joining us also will be Rebecca Harms. She'll be joining Genesis and Chanel. They're working on Hurricane Harvey recovery and some of those issues around policy. So they'll be we'll be wrapping up the show with them. So welcome to Growing Up in America here on KPFT Houston, Pacifica Radio. This is a discussion on children, public policy, politics, and our future. How do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of all of our kids? Genesis, we heard five cheese mac and cheese from Chanel. How about yourself? You have a favorite food?
Mine would be panes, which is like the day.
Panes?
Yeah.
What is that? Panes. Explain panes.
So it's like bolillo, like
white bread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you put like, well, you use a turkey and you put it in like tomato sauce and you cook it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add like radish, cucumber, cabbage. With like mayonnaise.
And then you make like a sandwich out of it?
Yes.
Oh, so it's like a turkey, a sort of a Salvadoran turkey sandwich.
Yes, it's amazing.
Better than a pupusa?
No,
but it's a Thanksgiving
gift.
It's
like on there with the pupusa.
Yeah. Hey, Don, how about yourself? You have a favorite Thanksgiving food that you want to share with us today? Something that you really love that you're looking forward to on Thursday?
Looking forward to on Thursday. No, I'll be working.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
I would say everything.
You like the whole works. You just like the turkey and the dressing and the sweet potatoes and the mashed potatoes.
Stop. I'm hungry now. Okay. You want me to get up and walk out? I just love it all.
You like all that
stuff.
Yeah,
I like Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I mean, it's good, right? You come together with family and friends and you have all this food. And I do feel, though, like you do a lot of cooking.
A lot.
And then everyone's finished eating like 15, 20 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So it's sort of a big deal. So you ready for a little bit of data head? Because we have Caroline. Caroline's on the line with us. On the line, Caroline Roberts, Poetry in Motion herself. And Caroline, how you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Very good. Hey, Caroline, your favorite Thanksgiving food today on this Thanksgiving special?
Well, it's hard to pick just one. Dressing is definitely my favorite, but I think it has to have cranberry sauce on top.
And, you know, there are about 100 different variations on dressing or stuffing. Which one do you like? How do you like yours?
I like dressing and stuffing, but dressing's what I grew up with the cornbread and, you know, nice and moist and, yeah.
A buttery cornbread dressing.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. You got to love delicious. That, right? Now, see, I like the cornbread dressing, but I like to put andouille sausage, maybe some crawfish in there.
Ooh.
It's really good, right?
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, Chanel's liking this, right?
I've actually never had dressing.
Jen, you've never had that?
No.
Yeah.
It's first year. Gotta try it.
Well, good. You need to try it. All right. What's our number today, Caroline?
So 1.525 billion.
1.525 billion. Number of turkeys that will be served? No. What does it mean?
So that is the amount of money that New York State is dispensing to Amazon for putting their headquarters on Long Island City.
So this is a little bit of a deal, right? This whole Amazon thing of choosing Long Island City or Queens and Arlington, Virginia, as their hubs. How are you feeling about this overall, Caroline? I'm getting a sense you don't like it.
I mean, I think the general reaction from everyone that I've talked to and myself was that it made the big search look like a little bit of a joke.
Yeah.
You talk to all of these cities, then you end up in New York and D.C. as if those cities really need revitalization or new jobs or anything like that. And it's really frustrating because I know a lot of people who would love to move to some of the smaller or even just not, you know, outside of New York, L.A., a few other places, but they have trouble finding jobs that are equivalent to what they're doing now.
So you're looking at it from the viewpoint of, say, young people coming right out of college.
Mm-hmm.
They want to move
mm-hmm.
to a place where there are plenty of jobs. And now Washington, D.C. and New York, which were one of the places, now just continue. So we're not adding Dallas to the mix or Wichita, Kansas, for that matter.
Yeah. And young people are already having a lot of trouble affording these places and rent and the price of living just seems to keep on going up.
Yeah. Hey, what does this mean, this big tax subsidy mean, Caroline, for school children? Because, you know, you might think, well, hey, with these big industries, this big business coming into town, more tax money for the schools, so the schools are going to be better. What's the reality there?
Well, for one, the billion that I'm, so $1.2 billion of that $1.525 billion, is money that the government will actually pay to Amazon. So they will reimburse Amazon $48,000 for every job because it's part of a program for businesses locating their headquarters outside of Manhattan.
Mm.
Of course, it's barely outside of Manhattan.
Right.
And so that's not even just a tax benefit. That's just like money that they will reimburse them.
It's a subway
stop. And on top of that, sorry?
It's a subway stop outside of Manhattan. One subway stop,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
and on top of that, they're also going to receive massive, massive tax breaks. So, you know, that's money that could be going to education, could be going to all these different things. You know, I think the rationale is that it will provide a lot of new jobs and it will stimulate the economy and will, you know, in the long run be a good thing economically. But it just seems like there were other places
yeah.
that needed this more where it makes more sense.
So who should we be mad at? New York City and Arlington, Virginia for rolling out these tax incentives? Or should we be mad at Amazon for choosing the city where they get the best deal?
All of the above? Well, that's actually the really crazy thing. I don't think it was the, I mean, we don't know this for sure, but from what some other cities have reported, they actually offer bigger tax breaks.
Mm.
So I'm not even sure that was the best deal, but, you know, it just...
It's still a $1.5 billion deal, though, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
And I wonder, if they would have not done the contest and gone to New York, would they still have received that money? That's a good
question.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
Yeah.
They certainly kind of started a bidding war.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over themselves.
So it's an interesting deal, though, Caroline. Caroline is the staff attorney over at Children at Risk, and obviously she's mad at Amazon. Are you going to order anything from Amazon this holiday season, Caroline?
Oh, I'll probably be a hypocrite and still end up ordering something because I'll run out of time or forget someone that I need to buy a gift for.
Caroline, I want to ask you, Thanksgiving is coming up this Thursday. What is the thing that you're most looking forward to on Thanksgiving Day? Do you guys have a tradition in your family, or is it just something you're looking forward to?
I'm really looking forward to seeing my nephews. I haven't seen them in a little while. One of my nephews just turned 4, aww, and he was told he could do anything for his birthday, and one of the things that he chose to do was go to the Christmas section at Target because he loves Christmas so much.
That's what he's doing, just going, not buying anything, he's just going.
I'm sure they ended up getting him something too, but he just wanted to go and look.
Wow. But I think that's one of the wonderful things about Thanksgiving is, right, it's just family getting together, seeing people you haven't seen for a while, seeing some of the little kids. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, playing games and tossing around a football with nieces and nephews. It's always sort of fun, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very definitely. Good.
Caroline Roberts, thank you for all you do. Thanks for being on the program today, Caroline.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. Happy Thanksgiving. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. It's Dr. Bob in the studio with Chanel and Genesis, our Hurricane Harvey, AmeriCorps Vistas. They're backing me up today in the studio. And, Jen, I wanted to ask you about holiday traditions, Thanksgiving tradition. You know, your family's an immigrant family in a sense, right? I mean, how have you guys adapted to this idea of Thanksgiving? How do your mom and dad, who come from El Salvador originally, how did they adapt to this whole idea of Thanksgiving?
I think at first it was kind of strange, like not really understanding
why we're celebrating a turkey.
Right.
Yeah.
So like for us, like eating the turkey was always the hard part. And like cooking the other dishes as well. But I think what we enjoyed most was just trying to get together and just being thankful. I think that was like important, like just being thankful and appreciating each other.
I think it's really interesting how a lot of immigrant families, you're like cooking turkey for the very first time.
Yeah.
And in a sense, turkey seems rather dry. It doesn't seem as good as chicken or other meat, you know. And yet, why are we doing this? But I often, you know, talking to a lot of people, it's often about just the family, right? It's this whole idea of giving thanks and being together. And who doesn't like another holiday, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we were all off, so might as well.
Very good. All right. Let's go ahead and talk to Farhan Mahid. Do we have a little bit of theme music for Farhan? On the line with us is Farhan Mahid out of Rice University. He's a fellow in health technology policy and recently wrote an op-ed about natural disasters such as Hurricane Harvey and their effect on families. Farhan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely, absolutely. For those in our audience who didn't get a chance to read this op-ed, give us the gist of the impact of Hurricane Harvey and other disasters like Hurricane Harvey on families, pregnant women, and children.
So hurricanes around the world and natural disasters, and like Harvey was really an extreme example of what we witnessed here, have both obvious effects which we see, which the media covers, like physical infrastructure gets destroyed, roads, like networks, and that access to health facilities for everyone, for example, would be an obvious channel through which Harvey, like things like Harvey can have an effect in terms of transportation. But other than the obvious things, I think a key element which people really do not cover, because the first response is just in terms of putting out the fire, is that there could be silent effects of these natural disasters, which are especially on young mothers and like young children. And, you know, like there is a big literature now which is coming up that pregnant women and young children in particular are in a very sensitive development. in their lives, and even small changes can really have these persistent long-term effects on disease, on their education, on their economic outcomes. And with respect to the hurricane itself, there's a study from Texas itself where they looked at historically in the last 30 years how have like hurricanes affected birth outcomes, and they found these effects on mental health of like pregnant women, and which were really adverse and like significant.
Farhan, what would you say, you know, when we look at the studies of adverse childhood experiences, do disasters like Hurricane Harvey, and we know that kids who have these adverse childhood experiences and their moms are more likely to have this stress, right, that impacts them long term. Is this what you do you think that these natural disasters basically are the equivalent of an adverse childhood experience?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think that's exactly an important missing thing in the discussion, that natural disasters are also a stressful occasion for people who are not directly affected. And that includes like mothers and like young children. And it's been shown from some of this like recent work that because of the stress, the birth outcomes are adversely being affected in Texas. So what do we do
in terms of when we have a natural disaster, what are the things that maybe, if we were to change public policy, Farhan, would we be focusing a lot more efforts on young children in terms of trauma, on young moms or on pregnant mothers in terms of taking care of them after a storm? Would there be much more of an emphasis there?
Absolutely. I think you need really a multi-pronged strategy which targets both the social determinants of health in terms of providing access to like financial resources for people to like protect and buffer themselves from the shocks, as well as targeted mental health services, which should be there should be a specific effort made, especially during like disasters, to target stress and mental health issues, especially for like pregnant women and like young children. And I think that's something which even the media can like do a better job in terms of being more sensitive, because sometimes it's sensationalizes the news a lot, and it's important to warn people, but it's also important to be careful about how that stress may be affecting other people. And so having segments around mental health and what people can do is something which could be an important implication from this as well.
Chanel, you're here in the studio with me, and you've been studying also the impact of Hurricane Harvey. It's interesting, right, that as we look at Hurricane Harvey as a whole, right after the storm, we made a lot about, you know, cleaning out the houses and getting housing stock back. And we talked a little bit, because you're at Children at Risk, we certainly talk a little bit more about this. But as a whole, we don't see a lot of public discussion about the impact of children. Right? It's getting back to school soon. But in a sense, it's getting back to school soon so that their parents could go back to work. It's not all about the idea of normalcy in their lives, right? We should be talking about children a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with you. And that's pretty much what this one of our reports talks about. It's called Still at Risk and Children 1 Year After Harvey. And it just kind of discusses how children have been neglected from the recovery conversation, and how maybe when the next storm comes, because everybody knows that there is
there
a next storm,
how
we can better prepare our children for future disasters and just help out and increase preparedness measures for them as well.
Farhan, the reaction that you received to your op-ed, I mean, did you get a lot of positive reaction, people sort of agreeing with you, or was it crickets?
I think people it's one of those things which they agree, but they don't think of. So I think it's one of those things where you really have to bring forth that point that, you know, yes, it's important, and yes, it's definitely it's something overlooked, especially for like very young children and like pregnant women. So I think that's absolutely that's exactly right. And but you know, in terms of policy, we still have a lag. I mean, we need to. I'm really glad that you gave me an opportunity to talk on the show, because we really need to have the word out there so people can have a better understanding that early childhood particularly, and like pregnant women in particular, are really at like, you really want to rethink your policies and your like discussions for how these like sensitive period in one's life can really have an effect.
And it's interesting, Farhan, because after the storm, a year after the storm, we went and visited all the hurricane-ravaged communities, and people were talking about this, right? I think people who were engaged in recovery were talking about children taking a long time to recover and focusing on mental health. So little by little, I think people are understanding. Before we go, Farhan, though, because it's our Thanksgiving week special, do you have a favorite food for Thanksgiving, Farhan? Your favorite dish?
I guess like a turkey with like spices, Indian spices.
That's it. You like an Indian spice turkey, right? Because otherwise it's a little bland, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I prefer a smoked or deep fried turkey, but it's for the same reason, right? You just need to add a little bit extra to it. So, Farhan Mahid, he's over at Rice University. He's the Ellie and Virginia Simmons Fellow in Health Technology. Thanks, Farhan, for what you do, and thanks for being on the program.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was a pleasure talking about it.
All righty. Take care, man.
Take care.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. Dr. Bob here in the studio. Joining me in the studio is Chanel Brown, Genesis Herrera. And Genesis, do you have a favorite tradition around? Oh, actually, it's Chanel's turn, right? Chanel, you have a favorite tradition? I mean, your people are from the South, right? I mean,
my family.
Your family are from the South.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you feel sometimes, like I feel like when I eat turkey and Thanksgiving in the South, it's a little bit tastier, right? Do you find that?
I think so. So what my family does when it comes to turkey, we don't go with the traditional turkey.
Yeah.
We do turducken, and it's just like, it adds like a little bit more flavor.
So the chicken inside the duck inside the turkey, right?
Right. It's interesting when you first hear it, but like once you taste it, oh my goodness, it's one of the best meats ever.
Do you have to buy it, or do you guys prepare it?
We usually buy it, and then we use different spices in order to, you know, give it some flavor. So,
very good. Yeah. And do you have a favorite tradition, Chanel?
So when we're in New Orleans for Thanksgiving, we usually attend the Bayou Classic, and it's a football game between different HBCU schools, Grambling State and Southern University.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of our favorite things to do during Thanksgiving. We love cheering for Southern University because that's where my cousin went.
Does Southern ever win that game? There was a time when it hardly ever did, right?
Right. Yeah, I think they've stepped it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. But we really enjoy the halftime show with the bands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. That's a nice little tradition.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, let's go to our next guest.
When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy. Don't ever play with...
On the line with us is Ken Wells. He's the president and CEO of Cherish Our Children. Ken Wells, how you doing, man?
Very well, Bob. How are you today?
Very good. Hey, thanks for being on the Growing Up in America program. For those who aren't familiar with Cherish Our Children and the work you do with incarcerated parents and children of incarcerated parents, give us sort of that 30-second rundown, Ken, about what you guys do.
Sure. Well, we, through most of our history, were a kind of an umbrella organization with a lot of programs. And in the last 6 months, the board made the decision to get out of most of our international programs so we could focus all of our attention on the No More Victims program. And No More Victims is a 25-year-old program that works with the children of incarcerated parents, primarily teenagers, in Houston schools.
And when we talk about numbers of children of incarcerated parents, what sort of numbers are we talking about, whether it's in Houston or in the state or in America?
Sure. Well, starting big and working our way down, it's been kind of a hidden secret in America, but as the number of incarcerated parents has increased, naturally, the number of children of incarcerated parents has increased. And at this point, it's estimated to be about 5 million kids nationwide who've at one point had a parent in prison. About 1 in 15 are from here in Texas. But Houston is ground zero because we're about a quarter of the inmate population in Texas comes from this metro area. So naturally, most, you know, the largest chunk of kids in this predicament come from the Houston area.
And we were talking with Farhan about this idea of adverse childhood experiences. When a child's parents have been incarcerated, and that is by definition one of those adverse childhood experiences. How does it impact a child when their parent is away like that?
It's kind of the wild card that makes whatever other risks and trauma are in a kid's life that much worse. For a couple of reasons, and a lot of this research is really fairly recent. But first of all, you already have a lifestyle surrounding the kid that is unhealthy.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about substance abuse, violence, poverty existing already. But then when you pull one of the wage earners of the family out, it immediately plummets the children below the poverty line. Kind of you pull the safety net out from under them. And maybe the best way to explain it is to tell you a story about a kid that I met the other day. Not a kid anymore. He's actually a young man that came through our program, has graduated. But he said that as a kid, I mean, at the age of six, he could do math, subtraction, addition, multiplication, division.
Yeah.
Because he was so used to cutting drugs in the family. You know, you get drugs
wow.
in, you cut them down to nickel bags, ounces,
yeah.
grams. He knew what everything cost. He knew the profit margins. He grew up in a house surrounded by guns and drugs and money changing hands. He had an uncle who was shot and went to visit him in the hospital. He was holding on to life. And when he recovered a little, he said, "This isn't the life for you."
Right.
But by then, he'd sunk into depression. And that's when he joined our program. So it's whatever experience the kid is going through, incarceration of a parent has been shown to just make it that much worse.
In the case of that child, though, Ken, I wonder, was incarceration better? I mean, getting the kid away from that dad who was putting them through all that?
It's a mixed...
Yeah,
a mixed
I know,
bag.
Right? Yeah, because kids want to be with their folks no matter what, but...
I mean, on the one hand, we do have a lot of kids who... Dad goes away or mom goes away, and when they come back, they get brought back into the family, and the family becomes whole again. But in just a horrible number of cases, the family has already atomized. There's barely a family in existence. But then the kid winds up in a situation where they're just being shuttled from grandparents to relatives to foster care to homelessness to couch surfing.
So one of the things in society, right, Ken, that people don't really take into account is that the cost, when we put away, when we incarcerate a parent, the cost in terms of making sure that that child grows up to be successful and productive, I mean, the cost goes up then, right? I mean, not only are we paying now for the incarceration, but the chances of that child be successful have gone down.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue society at this point is not paying to help that child.
Right, yeah.
At all.
If we were to change public policy, what would that look like? I mean, what would we be doing differently for these children when we decide to put away their parents, maybe rightly that we're putting away their parents, what should we be doing with those kids?
It's a hard one. I mean, the same programs that help children in poverty help these children.
Yeah, but yeah.
What I would have to put out there is that, you know, we're seeing these kids when they reach their teen years. And by that point, they have, many of them, been thrown away by society.
Yeah.
They are at high risk of suicide when we first see them. Even worse than that, they are high risk of dying early because they don't perceive themselves as having any future. So they engage in a lot of risky behavior. Once this particular population reaches high school, they are about 50% less likely to graduate from high school than their peers, unless they are Hispanic. And then it drops down to 20% as likely to graduate. And once they get out, they are anything from one-third to 70% more likely to wind up in prison themselves and continue that family cycle.
Hmm.
So right now, as a society, we're not doing very much at all. What our program does is take these children, put them in a peer support class in Houston schools. We're in three schools right now.
Yeah.
And provide them with the sort of circle of trust where they can talk about issues. Our adult facilitator can just stress to them that they're valuable, because nobody's told any of these kids they're valuable,
mm-hmm.
and stress to them that they have a future, and work with them day by day, incident by incident, to get them through this difficult period.
And as a final question, Ken, do we know that this program, are these kids going to be fine after going through the program, or is it still a little dicey for them?
Well, we are producing results that I've not seen really in other programs. We're graduating about 100% of the kids who come through the program.
That's fantastic. Year in, year out. Wow, that's fantastic.
And from what we can tell, they do not wind up incarcerated in any great numbers. The numbers are fairly small. So on the face of it, we are accomplishing really great things in these kids' lives, I think.
Yeah.
Where they are finding ways to accomplish great things for themselves. The flip side is, they're not cured of the lifelong trauma. These kids suffer post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
They suffer lifelong health problems. And so we're providing them with tools to address it, but they have a lot of work ahead of them. Now, I don't want to leave it but with the impression that these kids don't function. They do. At the top end, we had a kid who was a PhD, received a PhD from Columbia last year.
So you see some good stuff. You see some good stuff happening, and obviously the program's working. As we finish up, Ken, first of all, thank you very much for what you do. And this is such, we know what happens with a lot of these kids of incarcerated parents, and what you're doing is so important. But your favorite Thanksgiving food, Ken, you have an idea for us?
Well, in my house, it's a smoked turkey.
Oh, there you go. Do you guys inject your turkey before you smoke it with like garlic oil and stuff?
Nah.
Oh, you don't. It's just pure smoke flavor.
But now I would have to add just one more thing about our program.
Quickly.
A lot of our kids, there is no Thanksgiving dinner in their house. So the Thanksgiving dinner we held at Worthing High School this week was a really
It was important, delicious, and important, and great for those kids, right? So,
you betcha.
Ken Wells, he's the president and CEO of Cherish Our Children. They do great work with the children of incarcerated parents. Ken, very briefly, your web address if people want to hear more about you.
www.cherisharchildren.org.
Very good. Thanks, Ken. Thanks for what you do. Happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for being on the program.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America, KPFT Pacifica Radio, and time. Are we doing a little thumbs up, thumbs down? And so this is what we're going to do is we want to hear from you guys in terms of some of your favorite Thanksgiving traditions, favorite Thanksgiving food, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Boom! 713-526-5738. You like that, Jen? You like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's that? It's one of Don's favorite things. He loves the booms and the ha and all those things. So, we want to hear about your favorite Thanksgiving traditions, your favorite food. On the line with us, though, is my good buddy, David Cordua, chef extraordinaire. Chef Cordua, how you doing, man?
Happy Turkey Week, Dr. Bob. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Hey, I saw your cooking show last night, the Houston Cookbook. People need to get, I guess you have to go online and get it now, but they may repeat it. But it was fantastic, right?
Yeah, thanks for catching it. It was a really fun project to do. We filmed in July, and it was like the best summer camp I ever could have gone to.
Right, because you were cooking with the Blood Brothers. You were cooking with Kieran from Kieran's. You were cooking food from all over the world. I just thought it was extraordinary, and it's all here in Houston, which is fantastic.
You know what? We just scratched the surface. You know, obviously, we wanted to highlight the diversity of the city, But really take the viewer on a tour to be really a tourist in your own town.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing really how much cool great experience. Food. It's amazing how much great food we have here in Houston. I hope they run more of those shows, David. I hope they make more with you on Channel 8 because it was really, really good. And
we might need to start a petition.
Okay. The power of the press. Come on, we could do that. Though now Thanksgiving, chef, what are you making at home or when you go to your folks' house? You know, what are they cooking that's pretty special around Thanksgiving?
So the one thing that we have every year is a Nicaraguan tradition, and it's called relleno nica.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way I can describe it is like a pureed Cuban sandwich.
Wow.
without the cheese. So it's braised pork, there's pickles, there's mustard, white bread. It sounds crazy, but it's crazy delicious as well. So it's not Thanksgiving without that on the table. When it comes to the protein, we get pretty weird.
Yeah.
It usually involves deboning a whole turkey and uh-huh. wrapping the skin around it again. This year what I'm doing is something that I haven't done since I trained in France. We're doing ganado sang, which is pressed duck.
Wow.
So you roast a whole duck.
Yeah.
Debone it.
Yep.
Fillet it. And then you take the carcass and put it in a what's called a duck press that squeezes out the remaining juices, all the blood, and then you make a sauce with cognac and butter out of the juices that come out of it. So I'll be documenting the process so you guys can catch it on Facebook Live.
Oh, on Facebook Live. Wow. So we need to connect that to the Growing Up in America website so that we could have that.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Laura will do that. Laura will have that connected. And then is the skin really crispy around that duck as well?
It is, yeah. We do it really high heat.
Yeah.
And what makes it really crispy is that it's dry aged for about 3 days. So I'm literally placing my orders right now for the duck. We're going to salt it and air cure it for a few days so that skin kind of dehydrates and is ready to get really brown and crispy.
Wow, that's fantastic. And do you do a special sort of dressing or stuffing generally, David?
Well, we'll have the Nicaraguan stuffing that I mentioned, the cognac sauce.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know about sides, but I'm really... The last couple of years, I'm really into doing an amped up version of green bean casserole with fresh green beans, not canned, shiitake mushrooms, you know, house made onion rings. Because it's a great dish, but it's usually made out of pretty crappy ingredients. You know, so when you can elevate it, it's really delicious.
So can you elevate those French fried onion rings? I guess that's pretty easy to elevate that, right? Because that's what I love on those. Just, yeah.
Yeah, making your own.
Yeah.
Even the Chinese packaged fried onions are a little bit better.
Wow, very good.
Yeah.
This is why I love doing happy hours with you, David. You and I go to happy hour, and you order everything on the menu, and I'm just happy to be there and enjoy all that stuff.
And we can just geek out on food. Yeah.
It's fantastic, man. David Cordua and his do you have a favorite Thanksgiving tradition in your home? You know, your family's from Nicaragua originally. Is there anything special that you guys do around Thanksgiving besides all food?
No, it's my favorite holiday.
Yeah.
There's something pure about this holiday. I don't, maybe it's less commercial, you know, just mm-hmm. giving thanks about everything that happened that year.
Yeah.
That's the best part about it. And then just eating too much.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things I love about David Cordua is that he devotes a lot of his time to serve children, working with children at risk, working on making sure that there are not hungry children in Texas. Thank you, David, for all that you do. I give thanks for people like you, David, who not only excel at their own careers, but always have time to do more for kids and for families. So thanks, David. Have a very happy Thanksgiving, man.
Happy Thanksgiving, Dr. Bob. Thankful for you as well.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Those sound great, Genesis. What'd you think?
No, I can't.
It's when he said the blood comes out, right? Now, if he would have said the natural juices, that you would have sounded better, right? The natural juice, because it's cooked, so it's the natural juices. So.
Yeah.
No, that sounds better, right? It's like gravy. It's a gravy. It's really. Did you like Chanel? What'd you think?
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm really adventurous when it comes to food. Oh, so man. That sounds delicious.
I love a good duck. I guess no one else has a favorite tradition. Don, what is it? People aren't calling in for favorite traditions or favorite food, but I want to hear from Laura, who's out there. Don, do you have a favorite tradition, by the way? I know your favorite tradition is like hanging out at the station while everyone's having a good meal, and you're just making sure things run, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much. You look forward every year. Hey, Laura, you're out there out in the booth. What do you think? What do you like? What's your favorite food at Thanksgiving time?
So my favorite is the mac and cheese. It was a comfort food growing up, and even in undergrad, my friends and I would make mac and cheese before finals. It's just my favorite food.
So Chanel has that five cheese mac and cheese that she has at her home. That sounds pretty good.
That's fancy.
Well, that's fancy.
Chanel. Any type of cheese in the mac and cheese. I just love mac and cheese.
And do you have a favorite tradition of around Thanksgiving time, Laura?
No, not really. I don't have a favorite tradition, but I do like watching the really cheesy Hallmark movies, the Christmas movies, starting in Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, Thanksgiving is right at the beginning of Christmas, so that becomes part of the tradition. The day after Thanksgiving, a lot of people go to buy their tree, their Christmas tree. They start decorating the house. Miriam's out there. Miriam, you have a favorite Thanksgiving food?
Definitely the pie. I've always been a dessert person, so that's the one time I get to just eat pie with reckless abandon and be justified.
And do you like pumpkin pie? Is that your favorite pie, or do you like a different type of pie?
I'll try any pie once, but definitely pumpkin pie is my favorite.
Wow, very good. Genesis, you guys make the pies. I know you're a big baker yourself.
Yeah, I was just about to say my brother wanted me to do like pecan pie.
Pecan.
Oh, sorry.
That was the L.A. was coming out there.
Yeah. That was the Cali. Yeah.
Well, pecan pie and cheesecake, and I told him I'll combine both and do pecan on cheesecake.
See, that sounds really good to me, right?
Yeah. Well, like a pecan. I've never tried it, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's really good, like half pecan pie, half cheesecake.
Yeah.
That'll be really good. And do you have a favorite pie, Chanel?
Probably sweet potato pie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's it right there.
Now, I was in New Orleans once, and they did a sweet potato pecan pie. That was fantastic.
That sounds delicious, but I can't have it because I'm allergic to pecans.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it was really good, though. It was very, very good. On the line with us is Rebecca Harms, who's joining our panel here around Hurricane Harvey. Rebecca, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Do you have a favorite Thanksgiving food, Rebecca?
My aunt, she makes this cranberry jello mold, like cranberry sauce, but it is delicious, and I look forward to it every year.
Wow, very good, very good. Do we have some theme music for our Hurricane Harvey panel? Let's see what we have, Don. I think we have a little bit. I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. So I just want to dance when I hear that song. That's fantastic. How did you guys pick that as a theme song?
Laura actually chose the song.
Oh, Laura chose it. Yeah, because Laura wanted to see me dancing in the studio, so she got me dancing. So Rebecca, Chanel, Genesis, we're here to talk about sort of what's going up to date in regards to Hurricane Harvey. Chanel, what is the latest in this recovery around Hurricane Harvey?
So the latest is that, I mean, people are still trying to pick up the pieces and still trying to recover, unfortunately. However, there have been a lot of nonprofit organizations and faith-based organizations that have stepped up and are continuing to do the work and continuing to reach out to those that are still being affected and doing the best that they can to put them in homes and get them to their normal routine, back to their normal routines. It's pretty heartbreaking.
Rebecca, from your perspective, what's been the most alarming thing around recovery in this storm?
Besides housing, which is obviously very alarming, the number of people out of housing, there's been a lot of discussion about mental health, and we're on a phone call for the Mental Health Task Force. And it's a bunch of organizations talking about how they're still incorporating things in schools and help and training for teachers and just a lot of talk around mental health and how to help the kids, how to help the students, and how to help the teachers who are also impacted and trying to support the students.
And Genesis, from your perspective, where are we going from here? I mean, is there seems to be that there's still a lot of work.
Yeah, there's definitely still a lot of work, and it's definitely difficult for children, and they're, like Chanel and Rebecca mentioned, like, they're being left out of the conversation. There's a big focus on the mental health of children, but I think something that's missed out is the mental health of the parents. And so it's important for the children, but it's also important for their parents and the community conversations for that mental health of...
Mental Health America?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry. There's a lot of cases where their parents are being incarcerated because of their mental health issues that lead them to wrong paths and splitting up families.
Well, I think the second largest mental health facility in the country is the Harris County Jail. And so the first largest is the L.A. Jail. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting, right, when you think about incarceration as being tied to mental health, it's a problem. And yet we still see families that have been impacted by Hurricane Harvey. Some of them have some of the worst mental health problems and mental health challenges around.
Yeah. Before Harvey. And
even
then,
before Harvey, yeah. And then it was exasperated by Harvey. Chanel, when you think about how far we've come, you hear from a lot of people that, especially when you're not in some of the neighborhoods where you've seen some of the devastation, where they think, well, we are well on the road to recovery. And in some ways, we are well on the road, but this is a long road.
Yeah, exactly. It's a long road. Yeah, we've definitely come very far from the last year, but I mean, we still have a ways to go, especially with different communities and just different community members. I feel like we just really have to do a better job, and hopefully, not hopefully for the next storm, but just when the next storm comes, hopefully we'll be better prepared to serve those communities.
What's been the most surprising thing for you in all of this, Chanel? You came from out of town. You were new to Houston. You came here specifically to work on this hurricane recovery. What has been the most surprising thing?
I think probably the most surprising thing is just the disparities when it comes to recovery and how quickly it was for the affluent neighborhoods to recover than the low income neighborhoods. I didn't see any of that. When I was looking at Hurricane Harvey recovery, just in the news, it looked like everyone was impacted in the same way.
Right.
But when I got to Children at Risk and when I got to just dig deeper in the research, I saw that there was just many, many inequalities, and I think that's really disparaging.
So. Yeah. Rebecca, from your perspective, you came from out of state, right? You and Genesis both came from out of state. When you came down here, expectations and then reality, what did you see?
Along the lines of what Chanel said, I watched the news. I saw how devastating it was, but then you stopped hearing about it as much, and you just figured that, you know, they're recovering, but when I came here, it was shocking. I didn't expect to see so many vacant houses. You can still see the water lines on houses. I'm still very shocked about how easily the roads in Houston flood. That was definitely new to me as I'm driving and it's pouring, just how easy it floods in Houston. And it just, to think about Harvey and how much water was dumped during that storm, I can't even imagine what it was like to be here, and I can still see the aftermath of it.
Rebecca, from your perspective, what is the good that has come out of this, and what is the good that you're seeing? Because, of course, you want to see lemonade out of all these lemons as best we can. Mm-hmm. Is there some lemonade there?
I think, people have probably heard this before, but just seeing everyone band together and knowing that nonprofits are still working on it. One of my research projects is talking to nonprofits and seeing how they're still doing hurricane recovery and seeing how Harvey impacted them. And just from a few of the conversations I've had, they're still working on it, and some people are still working on Harvey recovery, and just to see how determined and how focused and how much they care about the community and making sure everyone can recover, I think that's amazing, just the resilience and the determination and strength that Houstonians have.
Genesis, let's stick with that question and sort of this lemonade. What good is coming out of all this? I mean, here we have you, three young activists that you're here in town and you're working specifically on this. Are you seeing some good out of this?
Yes.
That was yes with a question mark, right?
I think we have like a good intention. Nonprofits and federal help has really good intentions and jump-started a lot of really good projects. I think it's like, as well as like the citizens need to continue to hold us nonprofits and the federal accountable to continue to give them what they need to make sure that they're like actually being served. And
yeah. Who's holding people accountable though? I mean, the media is not focusing on this anymore. Are you seeing, I mean, I know you guys are keeping people accountable as activists. I mean, is that what it comes down to? Is that groups like us that are sort of active in this area, we're the ones who are keeping everyone accountable?
Yeah, so in the meetings that we have seen, it's the nonprofits that work directly in the communities mm-hmm. are present and actively speaking to city officials and city council members and also, like, the nonprofits are encouraging the people that they serve to be more vocal and to attend the meetings to write their public comments.
Mm-hmm. Outside, Chanel, outside of a recovery, is anything better going to come of this? I mean, is Houston a better city because we've all come together, because of new construction in certain neighborhoods? I mean, is there something that we'll be able to point to and say we're a better city because of this?
I think so. I hope so. I think one of the things that Harvey did is, or in terms of Harvey recovery, kind of address the problems that were happening before Harvey that weren't being looked at. So after Hurricane Harvey, then people, government officials, nonprofits start to see the exacerbated problems and just kind of focus on that. So hopefully that is some of the good that will come from this, just addressing those problems and fixing those problems and making sure that those problems don't occur in the future.
Yeah. Rebecca, you mentioned the streets full of water. You must hear, you know, I hear this, right? People say, listen, we had 52 inches of rain. That's never going to happen again. This was an unusual storm. But it does seem like we had Allison not too long ago. What do you hear in the community? Do people believe, the people working on hurricane recovery, believe we're going to see another storm like this in the not-too-distant future?
A lot of the people, they like to say it's not if it's going to happen next, it's when, and a lot of people are preparing for another one. They're approaching recovery and as if there will be another storm like Harvey. So a lot of the conversations are, how can we do better, what can we improve, and a lot of it is focused on making sure infrastructure can help better prevent the impact of the next storm. So a lot of people think that, yes, it will happen again, and we got to be ready for it.
Wow, very good. Ready for a little Final Four 54. Rebecca, stay on the line with us, and we're going to do our Hurricane Harvey activists, and we'll do a Final Four 54 Thanksgiving version. So, Chanel, I'll start with you. Favorite Thanksgiving memory when you were a child?
Again, probably just being a little kid and going to the Bayou Classic football game.
Bayou
and
like Classic.
And just cheering on for Southern and seeing the bands play. That was so much fun.
I remember bringing my daughter to a football game, and she came with a friend, and I just gave her a bunch of money. They were allowed to go to the snack bar as much as they wanted. And then around the third quarter, I saw both of them down a couple bleachers away where there's a little space. They were throwing up.
They
had so much
junk. Oh, no.
Yeah, not a favorite memory for my daughter.
Right.
But, so. Rebecca, favorite memory from Thanksgiving growing up?
When when I was younger, Thanksgiving had fallen on my birthday, and my family set up like this huge sign that said happy birthday. So we had like a little birthday party with Thanksgiving, and it was really fun.
Wow. Is Thanksgiving on your birthday this year?
Yes.
It is. Well, Thursday's your birthday.
Happy early birthday.
Wow. And you're going to be 22 years old this year?
23.
23.
Oh, my gosh, you're older than me.
Yeah, yeah. you young activist. Your favorite Genesis Thanksgiving memory from childhood?
Eating a lot and staying up late.
Staying up late.
Yeah.
Wow, very good. Next Thanksgiving question. Your favorite, and I'll start with you, Rebecca, your favorite holiday movie that you started watching around Thanksgiving time. It could be a Christmas movie, your favorite holiday movie.
Oh, gosh. I love the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving episode when they have their little Thanksgiving meal together. I love that. I think it's a TV show.
That's a good one. Genesis?
Yeah. I have so many, but I think I'm going to go with The Nightmare Before Christmas.
The Nightmare Before Christmas. All right. How about yourself, Chanel?
For me, it's How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, that's a really good one, isn't it? Yeah,
I love it.
That's a very good
one. We talk about it all the time in the office.
Yeah, yeah. Genesis, as you get older and, when you have your big family gathered around you and grandkids, what's the one Thanksgiving tradition that you want to make sure that you have in your family?
To gather everyone and like to have like turkey and like the sides, it doesn't matter, but at least turkey and to
just bringing everyone together, bringing the whole family together. Chanel?
I would just say the same thing, just bring the family together. Again, my family is so small and just all over the place, so it would be nice to for this one time to all be together in one room.
And yourself, Rebecca, the tradition you want to keep?
I would like to keep running the turkey trot every year and hopefully gather more of my extended family and cousins and do it and then lead that into a Thanksgiving meal together.
Wow, very good. You know, it's all around food, but it's all fun. I loved having Chef Cardua on where he talked about all this food.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wonderful to do all the food, but part of it is just having family. My daughter flies in on Wednesday from New York City. I'm so excited to be cooking with her and having her home.
Yeah.
It's all about family, right? And there's so much to give thanks for. I give thanks for you young people here being here and working in Houston. Listen, take care of your kids, everyone. Bring the same enthusiasm that Genesis and Chanel and Rebecca do in taking care of our community. Hey, hug your kids, and we'll see you next time on Growing Up in America here on Pacifica Radio.